Hey, so let's let everybody in. Right, Rocky rolling. Right.
I think the guys are on mute, Mark. If you may need to invite them to
Yeah,
unmute.
no, they are a host. Yeah, they are a host. That's fine. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Here we go. Let's get everybody in. Right, message. Admit all. Yeah. Russ is there, Craig's there. Yeah. Here we all come. Richard Homer. Yeah. Richard Homer's. Yeah. Great. Okay. Love it. Love it. Seeing people come in. Let me just open my screen up a little bit just so I can see actually who's here. There we go. All right. So, Mr. Smith, good evening to you. Richard, good evening to you. Yeah. Derek, good evening to you. Colin, big thumbs up to you. Nathan, there you go. Eager as ever. Yeah. Eager as ever. Ian Spence down in Plymouth. Frank, you're out in Essex, aren't you, Frank? Yes. Yeah. Gilbert, where are you, Gilbert? Just type in the chat box exactly where you are. I'd like to know where you are. Elizabeth Taylor, I'd like to know where you are too, if I may. And a shout out to you, Ian Claydon, exactly in the chat box if you can. Put where you're coming from. Yeah. Just gives us a clue. Yeah. Just gives us a clue what's going on. Right. How crazy are we? Bank holiday weekend, right? And we come on these calls, but yeah, we've got to keep the pattern going. We've said that we would do it for people, so we just keep it all going. And thanks to Craig, Daniel, and especially tonight with Carl and Louise, giving up their bank holiday, which is absolutely awesome, really is. Blessed is the word that I would use. A couple more people coming in. Yeah. Oh gosh. Keep coming. Okay. I mean, look, all you guys know the format of what's actually going on. Tonight, as I say, we've got Carl and Louise, Carl Bernard, Louise Murphy. And they're just talking about one of their turning a house into a HMO, which is great because you know a lot of us will use that strategy. A lot of us will use that strategy going forward. You know, it's one of the basic simple cash flow strategies for creating financial freedom. You know, and you know, taking control of your finances in your life. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So. For me here tonight, more than anything else, right? It's just the word is inspire. Give people the word that I'm really using all the time right now, right? Is because here we are, we're coming out the back end of Craig, and you might see this as well within the property account side of it. Yeah, the word I'm saying is. You know, people are always asking me, how the hell do we make this work really work? And it all boils down to one word. It's called desire. Yeah. Right. And you know, here we are. We've got Carl and Louise on the phone, on the Zoom tonight. And to be honest, Carl and Louise had massive desire. I mean, no matter what roadblocks came in their way. They were prepared to fight it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. There was a lot of handholding that went along the way. And that goes without saying. But they had the desire. And it wasn't just a desire, it's that phrase that I use all the time as well. It was a burning desire. You know, so I'm just going to throw this question out straight away. I'm not saying that you need to answer it. I just want you to think about it. I want you to ponder it. Right. And it's what is your burning desire? Yeah. Right. What is your burning desire to make this work? For me, it was I didn't want to be in poverty in my old age. It was as simple as that. Yeah. But you keep that to yourselves And as long as your desire is strong enough, right, you will climb mountains, you will swim rivers, swim oceans, just to achieve what you need to achieve. Yep. Okay. Tonight we've got the normal format. We're lucky we don't have Rory. I shouldn't say that.
Right. Good everybody thing it's not Rory recorded, Mark.
No, because everybody loves Rory because of the information that he's got about mortgages that are out there. You know, we don't need to know anything. We just need to know the man that can, that's Rory. But we've got Dan Fatica, Dan the Bridging Man, right? Dan will give us a little bit of an update. We've got Russ, wherever Russ is. He's out there somewhere on my screen, I'm sure. Right, and Russ can just give us an update on what he's seeing in the private rented centre, you know, legislation, demand, whatever he's seeing out there right now. And it's always good to get the updates, you know, rubbing shoulders with the right people. And Craig, you know, it's your time of year, really. You're trying to get everybody to do all their accounts, aren't you? Note to self.
Yeah, working hard,
self. Note to self. For me, Russ, do you want to tell people about the, just make sure that everybody understands what the rules and regulations are about asking questions and all the other bits and bobs that go with it? Yeah,
no problem. So if anybody hasn't been on before, the way we do it is we have the chat set to hosts and co-hosts. So you can talk to all of us, to Dan, to Craig, to me, Mark. You can put your questions in there. We'll collate them. We'll make sure that, you know, if there's two or three that are similar, we'll ask them once. But also for the guys presenting, it can be a bit distracting when you've got the chat box going off as well. So they can't see that. And then at the end, again, we'll make sure that if I haven't answered your question during the presentation, that we'll ask it to them at the end. And typically at the end, lots of people will, you know, want to give feedback and say thank you and whatever. And that's just our way of controlling it so that they can give you their presentation without being off put by all the chat and the questions. Keeps them on track. Means they don't go off at a tangent. It also means that people can't sell you all the stuff, the network marketing, water coolers and whatever else they've come on to do as well. So I hope that's clear. So by all means, bring your questions in the chat box at any time. And we will get to them either at the end of the Q&A or the end of Carl and Louise's presentation.
Okay, awesome. Absolutely cool. Right, so as Rory's not here, normally I bring Rory up first, but Dan, the bridging man, I mean, probably not so lots happened over this bank holiday weekend, but what are you seeing in the market out there right now, Dan?
Yeah, still seeing quite a bit of fallout, I think, from the stamp duty rush. Summer, solicitors are going on annual holidays. It is quite difficult to get deals through completion at the moment, I'll be absolutely frank. It's a war of attrition, chasing our solicitors for updates on what's outstanding, what's the next step. Certainly from a man management point of view, this is something that investors need to be on top of, be it bridging, be it mortgage purchases or their own cash purchase. There is a flow, certainly with when you're using a mortgage or a bridging lender, the flow of communication is from the lender's solicitor to the buyer's solicitor to the seller's solicitor and back. So there is a chain that every single email needs to bounce through. So if it's just a question like does the property require a mining search, that email will go from the lender's solicitor to your solicitor, from your solicitor to the seller's solicitor. The seller's solicitor will then answer your solicitor, who will then answer the lender's solicitor. That's a 4 or 5 email chain for one very simple question. So if that email is sat in someone's inbox for a day, and then the next person's inbox for a day, and the next person's inbox for a day, you can soon lose weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's really important. I always suggest that you have solicitors copy you on your emails, and that allows you to expedite the process that much more because you're seeing exactly in real time as things are being presented as an issue and being dealt with as an issue. So if there is cajoling and man management that's required, you can be on top of it. In terms of bridging, rates haven't really changed. You're looking at 75% as the top end for what you can borrow, loan to value wise. Rates from as low as 0.75, 0.8% for the more vanilla bridging lenders. They're going to arrange bridging loan in probably 4 to 8 weeks. The faster the finance is going to come in around that 1 to 1.2% per month mark. The entry fees, the exit fees, the broker fees, there's not a lot of difference in it there for whether you're going with the vanilla lenders or even a buy-to-let product. The arrangement fees are going to be around 1 to 2%. The exit fees are going to be as much as 1%, but not more. Early redemptions with bridging aren't really an issue normally. There's never, to my knowledge, early redemption fees, but there might be a flat redemption fee regardless of when you exit the term. There's a lot of detail with it. So when you are looking for bridging finance, push the broker for a bottom line figure of a 6 month cost of finance. Ultimately, that's what you need to know to assess a deal for viability. 30,000 feet, I say to people, look, allow 15%. If you're on and off quicker, you're going to save money. Back of a napkin, it's a conservative place to start when you're going out and viewing properties. 15% will have everybody paid, solicitors, surveyors, brokers, entries, exits, the whole boots caboodle. But most importantly, do drill down for that bottom line figure. You as investors need a pennies and pounds figure to understand if the project stacks up. Of course, there are going to be different lenders for different situations. If you needed to buy a property this Friday, there are going to be a lot of bridging lenders that won't be able to perform to those sorts of timelines. So really understand what the specifics of the deal are. If you've got time to wait 10 weeks for a bridging loan, you can get bridging finance from sub 1% per month. If you don't have that sort of time, you're going to need to pay a price and maybe work with lenders that are a bit more dynamic, able to make a decision much quicker and take a view on certain things. For example, buying a property to convert to a HMO. If that planning is a question mark, some bridging lenders won't want to take a view. Other lenders will look at it and say, well, okay, fine. We understand that they're looking to get sui gen permission for a 7 or an 8 bed HMO. Does this work for us at a 6 bed status? And are we able to take that risk and move forward with the loan without having all the permissions and the paperwork in place up front? So that, in that situation, that would be the difference between using a vanilla lender that comes in around about 12.5%, 13% for a full year of fees versus a 15 to 18% lender. It'd be a bit more dynamic, take a view, and be able to take on those cases without all the paperwork being prim and proper and in place. Market as a whole, not a huge amount has changed. Rory will be able to tell us when those buy-to-lets products do start to creep down, but we are still getting a lot of deal flow around the 50, 60, 70K mark where people just can't get mortgages at present. We did have a couple of weeks ago on a call, I mentioned up in Scotland, a client had difficulty with a low value buy-to-let in west of Glasgow. Valuation was 48,000. We are proceeding with a buy-to-let mortgage from Clydesdale Bank. So it does look like there are options at that space. I think he's paying a premium. It's around about 3.75%. But there are still options at that lower end.
Boom.
Back to you, Mark.
Boom. The interesting bit that you're saying there about the getting everybody to work together. I still think that for me as the investor, that's still my responsibility. And I know that some people work very well with the solicitors and some people don't, right? But I know when I had urgent, what I would call urgent deals, I would be literally saying to the solicitor, right, what do you need from me today? What do we need today? And then as soon as they said what they needed, I went off and made sure it was organized. You know, oh, I'm waiting for something from the vendor solicitor. So I'm on to the estate agent. Estate agent, get hold of the vendor. Vendor, tell us when that information, has it been sent by your solicitor? If it's not, get them to sell it. I call it drive it. And it was that type of, I'm going to use the word aggression because, you know, customer service and solicitors should not be in the same sentence in my eyes, right? I get it. I understand it because they've got to, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's. I get that, right? But, you know, in a world that's quite fast moving and it's very digital nowadays. It is very frustrating to hear some of the things that go on out there. It really is. Yeah. Okay. Really appreciate that, Dan the man. Okay. Russ, over to you. I can't see you. There you go. You've just come back up on my screen. Russ, yeah, I'm sure that you're being kept absolutely on your toes right now. Am I right?
Definitely. Lots of applications, lots of interest, lots of movement. More people moving in than moving out, which is good. If you're in an investment area, find out, you know, which companies are doing well, which companies are struggling. Because, I mean, we've got a big distribution center here for one of the big food package, food subscription companies, taking people on. We're probably housing one or two people a day just from that one employer. So there are some that are struggling, but there are some that are absolutely booming. So make sure you know what your what's going on in your investment area. The other thing I would say, particularly if you've got buy-to-lets and your agent hasn't been doing the visits during COVID because of the government restrictions, make sure you get them back in there. We've had a couple of landlords come to us in the last few weeks, ask us to take on the management. We've been around there. We've found a brothel, we've found a cannabis grow, we've found all sorts. So we found people who there aren't on the tenancy, the whole everything. So now is the time to make sure that either you or your letting agents are in that property, checking who's there, checking what state it's in, checking what's in the loft, and really getting on top of people, making that connection again. Because it's easy, you know, businesses have got out of the habit of doing some things because they haven't been allowed to. We always talk about the importance of strong management, and for me, that's it. It's being in there, being visible. You know, are there any problems? Are there any maintenance issues? Is there a leak under the sink? All those things. It's a pain in the bum, but you've put your money aside, your MOE money. Get them fixed. You know, don't let it become a big problem. Don't let it annoy tenants. Because that's the sort of thing that will, you know, lose your money in the long run. So, you know, make sure they are doing that. Make sure you see in the reports, if they're doing them, they ought to be doing some kind of photo report so that you can see what state your houses are in. That would be my, I think, my top tip for this week.
Yeah, no, Ross, very wise words, right? Because a lot of us, I don't have as many letting agents running my portfolio. We do it ourselves, but I know from the stuff that we do with the agents, that's one of the things. As soon as lockdown had started ending, it was okay, right, when was the last time we were in that house? When was the last time that we're in that house, and let's get an update. Because it is important, and Russ is 100% right. You know, property investing, everybody focuses on the property, focuses on the property, on the buy-in. But actually, the money, the long-term money is made on the overall management. And these guys, these tenants, right, these tenants are our customers, yeah? They're not just tenants, they're customers, yeah? Right, and if we want customers that are going to pay up on time, that are going to stay there for a long time, and also recommend their, you know, good friends, not scallies, right? We do have to look after them. And that's one of the ways of just, you know, cutting down on the overall malarkey around running properties, yeah? And I'm sure, Russ, you'll agree with me 100% on that, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a lot of malarkey.
As soon as something's not right, you've got to get it sorted. It's not one of those things, oh, we'll just leave it and see what happens. It is get things sorted. But for any of you that do have properties that are under management, get your agents out there. Craig, yeah, you're I mean, it's coming to your time of year right now, you know, and as the weeks go by, people want more and more from you. Am I right?
Well, we've had a few more people respond. We've been chasing people since April for their personal stuff. And those that are proactive, we've looked after. Those that have ignored us, we've tried to look after. I'm doing a refinance at the moment. And again, the broker's now starting to want tax information. So that'll have to be pulled up first thing tomorrow morning just to make sure that the wheels on that keep turning over. And quite expensive if I don't get it right. So, yeah. The other thing I was just going to say very quickly, Mark mentioned about Dan and the process. The way it was explained to me, as a property investor, you're effectively a conductor. So you're not blowing any of the instruments or stringing anything, but you're standing there kind of pointing and just making sure everybody comes in at the right time. There we go. Mark's got it. Everybody comes in at the right time. And it feels like herding cats at some stage. And
definitely.
And I still, Mark mentioned customer service and solicitors. I've got a couple jokes about how 99.9% of them give the rest a bad name. And you'll have to think about that one for a little second. But
think about it.
Yeah. And sharks don't eat solicitors as a professional courtesy. So there are a whole bunch of things, but really it is quite frustrating in this day and age when you can bang emails and zip documents. There's no longer a need to courier and post and all the rest, that it does take as long. But again, your crucial skill on the front end is being that conductor and making sure everybody does what they need to. And then, as Mark also said, you know, we always focus on the buying, and a lot of what we do here is on the buying process, trying to find the right deal at the right price in the right area, you know, trying to get the right tenants, do the spec and the refurb to the right condition. But really, it's the long-term management and making sure that year in, year out, your rents come in on time, tenants don't trash the place. And this is the key that I've struggled with over lockdown, is when it's a £50 repair, you want to know about it. Not when they've said, well, there's been a leaky tap for the last few months and now we've got a water feature and your £50 repair now is a £5,000 floor and ceiling and a new kitchen. And I was just trying to get some of the tradesmen out there because the tradesmen seem to be incredibly busy at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's having all of these systems in place, and it's a journey and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. But it is stressful.
I know from my personal journey, I am so glad that I did what I did all those years ago. You know, there comes a point in one's life. Yeah, right. You either do or you die. Yeah, right. And actually, you either do and you die. Yeah. and it was a massive leap of faith. But you just going back into what I said earlier about that desire, right? The desire not to be poor. Yeah. And yeah, okay, you've got to do property, but there's so much to learn about property, not just the overall buying of the asset. You've got to look after it for a very long period of time. And, you know, I always say it, I always thought originally I'm going to be in this for 20 years, you know, and I'm thinking 20 years, but here I am. The best part of 18, 19 years down the road. And I'm saying, well, just there's 20 another 20 more. Years. Yeah, there's another 20 years, if not longer. Yeah. And the compounding effect of that very small decision years ago is just growing by the day. And I would encourage you all, no matter where you are on your journey, just to keep going, keep taking that next step, because, you know, it's not about how much a person actually owns. It's not the net worth that matters in my eyes. What matters is how much is that money giving us in an income going forward, because that's the true determinant of wealth, guys. It's your overall passive income. Now, I'm not interested in net worth. I know people that are, you know, multimillionaires that have not got a pot of bloody in, right, because they've not got the income yet that's coming off it. Yeah, I'm a millionaire, yeah, I'm this, that, and the other. What's your, you know, what passive income does that bring in? Oh no, it brings in enough. And then all of a sudden you start hearing little things and you realize the boracic, yeah, absolutely boracic. They've got the assets, but not the they've got the assets, but not the income. And if they sell the assets, they can't afford to pay the bloody capital gains tax that goes with it, yeah. Right. And so, you know, me just saying something like that should give you some really big clues. You know, we are doing the right thing here, buying income generating properties. And I'm saying, just give me a thumbs up if you agree and you can see that perspective. Yeah. Right. Because it is massive. OK, but talking about income generating properties. Yeah. We've got Louise Murphy and we've got Carl Bedard. Yeah. And Louise and Carl turned up on a T60 with me, what, 3 years ago, guys? 2.5 years ago?
About that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the guys got busy. They weren't shy of work. They weren't shy of putting in the effort. It was a massive roller coaster. Am I right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolute massive roller coaster, but the guys have got on with it and now it's all starting to piece together for them, and I'm sure they'll have a great future in property, right? And they're going to talk to us about tonight about a property that they've turned from a house into a HMO and all the tips and tactics that they would be giving people that are about to embark on it and do the same to try and help them save some time, effort, energy, and maybe some worries along the way, yeah? Maybe some serious worries along the way. The guys are very giving. They put out quite a bit of content on social media. So if they do put the social media handles up, you just make sure that you get a hold of them, right? Because, you know, they've got a lot of information. And actually, because they were challenged so much, right, I really feel as though that a lot of you out there are going to connect with them. So I'm just going to pass them over to you. Give them a massive round of applause, thumbs up, all the bits and bobs that we do to Louise and Carl. There we are. Guys, over to you.
Thanks, Mark. All right, we'll just bring...
Share your screen. Yeah.
There you go. There we are. See that.
Boom, we've got you.
Brilliant. Okay, hi. Thanks for having us on, Mark. So I'm Carl. I'm half of LMKB Property. The other half is my business partner and my partner in life here, Louise. So who are we? Basically, I started my career in the financial services. I worked for MBNA and Bank of America. Did quite a few different roles in there, always around sort of like technology based, because that's what I've got my degree in. Ended up sort of finishing being a program manager in charge of the IVRs and telephony systems for Europe Card Services. I was there for about 12 years, and then I had the opportunity of taking voluntary redundancy. And at that time, it felt like it was right for me to do that. So I went off, but the only problem is that I didn't have a bloody clue what I wanted to do. So I left Bank of America, and I knew I wanted to work for myself, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. So initially, I set up an IT consultancy firm, and I went contracting. But very quickly, that I knew that wasn't the right thing for me. So by that point then, Lou will talk about herself now, but she joined the consultancy firm and she's and I went off to try my hand at various things. So I've done things like commercial growing, market gardening. I wanted to set up a microbrewery at one point because I like drinking beer. Yeah, I've done a fair few things. And then I ended up, we bought this big old house and I started renovating that. And then it was literally one time I spotted an advertisement on Facebook for, what's his name? Martin Roberts. And so, yeah, we went along to that. And I guess the rest is history from there, really. So pass you over to Lou.
Yep. So as Carl says, we mess in the financial services industry, where, again, I am actually still working as a project manager and IT through our own consultancy business. I've been now doing that for over 20 years. And when I was writing it on the slide, it actually scared me that I've been doing it for so long. I still think of myself as young, but obviously I'm not. So yeah, I'm now working for Unilever as a consultant there. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, really. That's me.
Okay, so our property journey, it started quite some time ago in 2005. We were both working at, it was MBNA at that point, yeah. And we I guess it got serious in our relationship. We trying to get married, so we started sort of like costing it all up and everything, and we were looking at around a £30,000 wedding, and we both sat there and thought, do we really want to spend £30,000 on a wedding for other people effectively, or should we maybe buy a couple of properties? So we thought, you know what, let's buy a couple of properties.
We're very romantic, as you
so
can see.
we didn't know what we was doing. We were fairly sort of level-headed people. So we thought, I'm sure we can probably apply ourselves to this. So what we thought we was going to do, which was smart, is we would buy off plan. And the reason we thought that was a good idea at the time was because of the way the property market was. It had been climbing steadily. So we thought this would be quite a good one, is to buy something off plan now. And by the time it gets delivered to us, the market would have naturally given us an uplift. So we thought, we were being clever again there. We looked around, we thought Liverpool, it just been given the capital of culture. It was going to get it in sort of like 12 months time. So we thought, right, there was a lot of activity going on in Liverpool. So we thought quid's in here. And so we bought two properties, put down our deposit. What happened then was when they were due to be given to us, we got told there was a 6-month delay. And we thought, well, that's not a problem. We'll get it a bit later down the line. The market will have gone up even more. We'll make even more money on it. That money then we can sort of decide what, we thought we were going to make a ton of cash, basically. And we was even going to be able to maybe pay our current mortgage off or just have like a really good lifestyle. Anyway, that 6 months then went to 12 months. And again, we still wasn't, that concerned. Again, all we were seeing was the sort of the pound signs. The market was still climbing. Liverpool had got the capital of culture, and they were in that year of their capital of culture. And then basically delivered the properties, 18 months delayed. But unfortunately for us, 2 weeks before that, the market crashed. And oh boy, didn't it crash. We're talking about the big one then. And so they handed us these keys saying, thanks very much. And by the way, these properties now are massively in negative equity. So it's like, right, well, what can we do? We can't sell them, because we'd be just throwing money away. So what we decided we wanted to do there was like, right, we're not going to sell them now. We're going to hold on to them. We'll do a sort of buy to lets on them, which is, that's what we did. Which was, it was okay to begin. It wasn't too bad. We had a few challenges at the beginning because, the block was over 200 apartments. And then you can imagine that a lot of people were planning on doing the same thing as we were. So all of a sudden there was an influx of these properties. From that, then basically, what we found then was the interest rates started to climb. Then, so then the mortgage, we wasn't being able to cover the mortgage, we were having to subsidize it. What we did then is we changed it over to serviced accommodation, but this is serviced accommodation before you had Airbnbs or anything like that. We were on what was that property thing called?
Late rooms.
So we was on there, and we was going out, and we was having to do the meeting and greeting, the cleaning, and luckily because of the jobs we had, you could block out a couple of hours around your lunchtime for a meeting, and run off over to Liverpool, clean the apartment, then come back, and then around tea time when you finish work, run down there, go meet the people. Let them in. And that was just a continuous cycle. But we had to do what we had to do, basically. And eventually we managed to get a grease, and eventually we got cleaners and stuff like that. But as soon as we got as soon as interest rates came down, that was when we decided that we don't want to do serviced accommodation anymore. We'd had a few sort of horrors in there, like people trashing the place and stuff. So we then put them back onto sort of standard ASTs. And you know, we had student accommodation then, and with them, and at the moment we've got professionals in there. So we've always kept them really, because we've had to. But we've always done what we had to do to make them work. And you know, they cash flow. So, you know, they're still in negative equity, not as much as when we first got them, but you know, they cash flow for us. So they sit in the portfolio, and you know, we always thought there was a bit of a millstone around on that. But what we actually realized is when we went and got some proper training, we actually found out that because we'd had these properties for such a long time, what that did was make us very marketable for mortgages and things like that. So that allowed us then to not have to do a few buy-to-lets to start off. We could start off on HMOs. And that's why, I guess, really what we've come to do with a sort of course, which is what Lou now will talk to you about.
Yeah, so I guess with regards to why property, so after that, I think, you know, We walked away from property then, in the sense that we didn't do any further investment. And I think it's probably something we both regret. We wish we'd have carried on at that point in time, but we kind of, suppose we felt like we'd been bitten a bit. So why have we come back to property now? It's basically from a pain point. So as we mentioned at the start, I'm a contractor, and there was some legislation that the government brought in a couple of years ago, which is basically called IR35. It's treating contractors as employees, and therefore your tax bill is similar to an employee. That was going to have a knock-on impact to our lifestyle. We were concerned that we wouldn't be able to pay the mortgage on our own house. So we recognised that we needed to do something. We have a couple of friends that have done property investment. We've seen them make it work. So yeah, so as Carl said earlier, he'd seen the advert for the Martin Roberts training. So we went along for our 2-hour and then our 3-day and so on and so forth. And, you know, that was great because it started us on a path, and then we ended up on a mentorship with Mark. We talked Mark through what our kind of challenge was. At that point in time, we had a couple of other buy-to-lets that we were looking to purchase. Mark basically said, forget about those, you can make your money work better for you. You're going into the HMO business. So it was kind of told rather than anything, and which is good, because, you know, that's great. So yeah, so that's why we're here today, is just to talk you through one of our HMO deals. So there we go.
Okay, so this one is our first HMO. We called it Project Simpson because it's on Seymour Street. I guess it's something a little stupid, but it was a standard 4-bedroom end terrace that we wanted to turn into a 5-bed HMO. And it was, you know, sort of traditional. There was sort of 2 living rooms downstairs with a kitchen diner on the back. Upstairs, 3 reasonable sized bedrooms, 1 bathroom, and then you've got those tiny box rooms at the front. So we thought, right, well, we can turn this into a 5-bed HMO. What we wanted to do to it was we wanted to take 2 of the rooms and have them as en suite. And then we would have 3 of them sharing the communal bathroom. We wanted to do that because, you know, when we'd done our research and we looked into the area, we knew around that area it was predominantly blue-collar workers. And we've spoken with other investors as well. And you see a lot of properties nowadays, and, you know, it almost seems like a competition to make them look the best and, the grandest, and you know, having £60,000-£70,000 refurbs on there, all on suite. But it's like, you know, what is the point in having something that high level for an area where, you know, people, and, you know, what you would have to charge them in rent to make the deal work, that people are just not going to pay for it around there. So we kept more of this. We We wanted to have three rooms that were sharing a bathroom. We didn't want it to go anything more than that. Ideally, I'd maybe be like a 1-to-2 ratio on bathrooms, but we thought three was fine. And in that way, then it just gives people options. They might not want to spend the amount for an ensuite, but they're happy to pay like the rates we had for the having a communal bathroom. So that we changed that. When we did the when we bought the property, we initially bought it at 100,000, and when we did the survey on it, we found that there was quite a bit of damp there, so that allowed us to be able to negotiate the price down. I think we got it down to 97,500. So yeah, the whole ground floor and all the kitchen that needed a new damp course in there. We did have some penetrative damp as well on the gable end wall, so we had to do some sort of changes there. We did a full redecoration on it. Initially, we was going to try and keep some of the wallpaper and stuff like that and just effectively paint over, because it was quite neat and tidy, and it was fairly okay. It wasn't, you know, old and antwacky sort of stuff. But we ended up having to sort of change that in the end, because a lot of it was lattice plaster, and we needed to fireboard out those out those walls. Although the HMO officer was actually okay not to, we felt a bit uncomfortable with that. We wanted to make sure that people were safe, and, you know, what's his name now? The building control guy. He was sort of, he thought it was a good idea to that as well. So yeah, we ended up having to do a sort of full redecoration on there. And then, as you can see there from the slide, you know, we obviously had to make it HMO compliant. So, you know, fireboarding on the walls, on the underneath of the stairs. We needed to put in an interlinked fire alarm system. Fire doors, you know, all those kind of things, emergency lighting. HMO, Wirral Council are quite strict anyway. So, we needed to make sure everything was in there, and it was sort of, you know, it was on the point. We had to put a new boiler in as well, which was something initially we didn't think we'd have to do, but when we sort of tested it, we found that the it was having a few issues. And then what we actually, which was a good lesson for us, was when we got the plumber around to sort of have a look at it, he was basically sort of saying, look, this is not powerful enough for the fact that you're going to have three showers in here. Even though we did have one of the showers as an electric one, and we did that specifically because we thought if there was a problem with the boiler, then there's at least a shower that's you know it doesn't need sort of hot water from the boiler. But even so, even with that, he was like, you need a higher kilowatt boiler. So we went for the biggest sort of boiler we would get. Like what he was saying originally was we actually should have had a separate buffer tank for the water, but you know, all that means is that, you know, if everybody was to have a shower at the same time, the boiler might struggle a little bit, but that's, you know, we can live with that. What we did do then is we kept the kitchen that was there. You know, it was okay. It was a bit untidy. What we did is all we did is we changed the handles. It made it almost look like a new kitchen just now. We gave it a really good clean down, and we could reuse it. It was fine. And we changed the kitchen in there when what we had there, you know, already worked for us. And then the other thing we needed to do is we needed to sort of change all the flooring throughout, so carpets, laminate flooring, things like that. You know, all that went down brand new, which made the place, you know, just made it sort of feel new and sort of sparkly. So we could create what you see, some of these really high-end HMOs. We could pretty much create that with like the sort of things we did there at a fraction of what, you know, some people are spending on them. So you'll see now Lou will talk you through the sums of this.
Yep. So as Carl said, this was 97,500, and we used bridge and finance for the 75% of that. We used money out of our own home for the original deposit, so for the 25%. You can see there then I've kind of obviously summed up all of the details around like the stamp duty, survey, legals, broker fee, the solicitors, everything you kind of expect to see here. I think a couple of things as well we've added in here were buildings control and buildings insurance, because it was something we were aware of, but we didn't really, you know, go into the full detail in our original sums for the price of those. So, you know, you can see it's about £1,500 there. So it's something to be aware of. And the refurbishment money came from Angel Finance. And I think Mark will probably remember, I think we were kind of, I guess we found the whole concept of Angel Finance really hard. I wouldn't say it comes easy now, but it's definitely easier. We're quite private people, and we don't always talk about money and what we do and what have you, but we've definitely changed our attitude towards that, and we're a lot better at talking to people about that now. This was financed through Angels there. And as you can see, then I've just then talked about the costs for the bridging. So things that Dan was talking about before with regards to like fees that you end up paying the bridger. So all in all, we were in at 141. Then we had to refinance it, obviously, once we were taking it off the bridging onto the mortgage. And that's when we got our end valuation. So we'd initially done our figures on hoping for 130, but guaranteed we'd get 120. And then you can see here, we asked for 150 and we actually got that 150. I think that was a combination of the actual the actual work that we'd ended up doing to the property, so we could justify that. And, you know, the market was rising and has been rising. So it was a little bit of luck, but, you know, we made some of our own luck, I think, in the work that we did. So, yeah, so the money left in that is just over 32. Based on our current cash flow, which is, well, just shy of 1,200 a month, That's given us a 43% ROI. So, you know, that's higher than we originally estimated when we thought we were going to get the 120, 130 back end value. So, you know, we're more than happy with that. Yep. And then here's just some of the, everyone likes a photo. So just some kind of before, during and after. So you can see there the kind of original old kitchen, because when we did the damp proof course, and then we've just kind of given the kitchen a facelift, and obviously all the white goods have gone in there. And the right hand side wall pictures, that's the box room that you get in these style properties. That room was on the end of the gable end, and that's where Carl was talking about was having the damp before. So that was completely, all the plaster work was hacked off, the damp proof course it took place. And then you can see there, that's the communal bathroom that the guys are all sharing. Just the renovation of the hall and getting rid of the lat and plaster. And then, yeah, just showing a couple of the bedrooms. So this is the bottom picture is the upstairs front bedroom. You kind of see the louvre windows in the alcoves. And then the middle picture, that again was treated and damp proofed. And then, yep, that's now bedroom one. And we've kept the louvre wardrobes, just, you know, a lot of storage in that room for the people. And then the far room on the right is the front living room, what would have been, and that's basically the one of the ensuite rooms there. So we've kind of got that combination that Carl was talking about. Okay, so lessons learned. So the first one was the refinance on this. So when we went to get refinance, basically the mortgage company wanted all searches to be repeated on the property, which was something that surprised us, because not everybody kind of has to do this or goes through this. And it basically added about 2 months onto the time period for us to be able to complete the refinance, which was frustrating. We were lucky, we were still well within our bridging time period. I think we'd taken the loan out for 12 months. We finished the renovation earlier than 6 months and we were good to go. So I think by the end of it, it was a 9 month time period from the original purchase to having it refinanced onto a mortgage. The building quotation, this is definitely a lesson learnt. It was based on a video of the property, because at the point in time when we purchased this, there's a little bit more of a history, isn't it? Because Carl had originally seen this property several months prior to when we had our offer accepted on it. So it had gone up for sale, Carl had viewed it, somebody else had then actually purchased or was going through the purchase on this one. then that sale fell through. We'd had it on our tracker and we kept viewing, you know, checking back on your database, seeing what properties are, you know, have come back on the market. So then when it came back on the market, we did offer, obviously got accepted, but we were in COVID, so we couldn't take the build around to get a quote. So the quote was done off a video that the estate agents had produced. So, you know, you can imagine then that when we do get the builder into the property, the list of things that he then finds that were not originally identified became a bit of a challenge. Actually, do you want to talk about that?
And then, yeah, I guess one of the other ones, which is a personal gripe of mine, was the time we wasted. And it, one of them was having to go in there. And it, this is one of the things that we was told not to get into, was doing any of the work yourself. Let other people do that. You're there to find the money, find the deal. But when the builder sat down with us and he was like, right, okay, well, if you want me to strip any walls, then it's going to be £500 a room. And I was like, absolutely no chance. I am not paying you £500 to strip a room. I could get someone in to do a whole house for that. So I'd gone back and said, look, I'll get someone in to you know, I think I'd found someone that was going to do it for about £200, the whole house. And he was like, well, I don't think that's fair. You know, you're doing me out of money. So the compromise was that if anything like that, if we wasn't going to use him, then we would have to do it ourselves. So we were literally going in there at a weekend and wallpapering, stripping wallpaper, which is, you know, it's awful. It's, you know,
it's not that useful.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a night of an evening or something like that. So, yeah, next time with that, if you know, I would just put my foot down and basically be like, no, you know, I am not, you know, I'm not paying those prices, but I'm not doing the work myself either. And then the other thing I sort of found myself falling into the trap of was running around for the builder, picking materials up for him. Paint was a big thing, which, you know, in the end I didn't mind to begin with, but the more I did it, the more he relied on me to do it. And again, it's like, I'm not there to do those kind of things. So yeah, anything like that, again, I would just say no, basically. Challenges, okay. The biggest challenge I would say we had on this one was actually the neighbours, which was something we really just didn't factor in at all. And I guess it started straight away as soon as we sort of met them. You know, I don't want to speak ill of anyone, but they're your classic nosy neighbours, you know, always stood in the window looking what's going on. So first day we went over a very sort of, you know, it was very pleasant conversation with them, told them what we was doing, told them that, you know, there'd be a refurb going on for the next, you know, 8 weeks. And then from, you know, from there, then we would be looking to put professional people in there. So we've always been very upfront and very honest with them. And then the sort of the building work started, and then what we was finding then was like every time I go on site to have a look at it, they'd be coming over. When's the building work finishing? When are you moving the skip? How long is the skip going to be there? And I was like, well, look, you know, I've told you it's an eight week build. We're on schedule. If anything, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but take it for 8 weeks. When are you moving the skip? And it's like, well, when it's full, basically, but then I'll be putting another skip there. So, you know, this went on, and then I started sort of getting the builders saying, oh, we've had a run-in with the neighbour. She's screaming and shouting at us. And I was like, right, okay, brilliant. So I went round and she was crying and sort of, again, it was all over the skip. So I went round there, thought I calmed everything all down. Everything was happy again. And then we started getting all this complaint, saying she's coming round complaining again. I was thinking, are they just making the most of this? Or, you know, and luckily I was actually there one day when she knocked on the door and had a go at one of the builders. And it was pretty ferocious, to be fair. So I went down and I spoke to her again, and then her husband gets involved, and then the next thing then we start getting the council phoning us basically saying that the we're running an illegal HMO and that there's been no building regulations done on it, that it's the, you know, it's a fire hazard, that we've got too many people in there. So we, you know, we ended up, you know, we sort of said, well, we've got a HMO license and, you know, we've got the building controls that I can show you. And as soon as we said that, they were fine. They weren't interested then. But then they'd gone around and they'd sort of spoken to all of the other neighbours. So all the other neighbours were worried about what we was having there. So we ended up having to speak to them. And what was good was one guy came to us and he was like, you know, we sort of told him what it was we was doing. And he was like, well, when are you thinking of putting these people in there? And I was like, well, it's full already. And he's like, oh, right, well, I've not heard anything. I was like, well, you know, that was one of the big reasons we had the HMO there, because we feel that they are generally quieter than if there was like a house full of mates in there, or, you know, a family with, like, you know, noisy kids. You know, these people sort of like tend to live in one room and, you know, effectively they are strangers. So they were fine with that. And that, you know, things seem to have calmed down a little bit now, but sadly we don't speak to the neighbours anymore. They kind of blank us. So that was one challenge. And then the next one, which Lou's already alluded to, was the builder. It was a real sort of carte blanche for him to keep coming and trying to find. You could see, you know, it was quite evident he was looking for more work. So I had to, you know, we had to be really on top of that and really on, you know, I'm not a builder myself, but I know quite a lot about the building process. My dad was a builder. You know, I've renovated my own house. So, you know, I can tell when someone's trying to pull the wool over my eyes. And, you know, that pretty much started from day one. Like, they were going, oh, we have to replace all the floors, they're rotten. And I was like, well, show me where you mean. It takes me over. He's like, oh, look at it, it's all rotten. I just got a screwdriver and I put it in there and it hardly went in. I was like, don't start that kind of stuff with me. So, you know, that was a challenge. But, you know, we got through there and there were extras that we had to pay for because basically his quote was based off a video, but unfortunately there wasn't really much we could do about that because of it being COVID. The next issue we had then was the builder again, and that was like once the property was up and running, we had a few issues with leaks, which, you know what, it is what it is. You know, we'd expect that on something like on a new refurb. But the first time he came around, he was trying to blame it again on the gable end wall that it was letting water in. In the end, we ended up getting someone else in, and it was just a screw that he hadn't tightened up on the toilet. So that sorted that one out then. But then the second leak we had, we went out to him and sort of said, look, you know, we've got a leak on here. And he just ghosted us. We sort of never heard from him again. So it sounds like we had like a real nightmare builder, but we didn't. You know, we got on pretty well with him. You know, we was pleased with the work he did. You know, he was efficient. You know, he was very communicative for a builder, I think. Apologies as well if there's any builders on there. But sadly he ghosted us, and, you know, that means a lot to me. So I would not work with him again because of that. Because one of the things we sort of tried to mitigate was I sort of sat down with him and got him to write it into the contract that there was a guarantee for 3 months afterwards, or up to the point when we get the first tenant in, then it's 3 months. Because if we can't get a tenant in for a few months, you know, the warranty might run out without us ever even actually testing anything out. So, but unfortunately, he didn't honour that. And there's no point us trying to chase him on that, like, through the courts and things. It's just wasted energy. We just get on with it and find another builder and get on to the next project, basically. So that was that one. And then the other challenge was getting tenants in there. And, you know, I was confident because we'd researched our area, We knew what the strongest tenant profile was in that area. But what we couldn't factor in was COVID. And just the fact that when the property became available, we were still in lockdown and people just weren't moving around as much as we wanted them to. So, you know, the property is full now, but it took several months to get there. And that is what it is. One of the other challenges we had, which was just as it was about to come, so about a month before we were halfway through the build, really, we got talking with a charity and they wanted to take the building for 5 years. It wasn't a Serco, it was a charity called ARC. And they wanted to sort of take it for 5 years. They would take it off our hands, very much like a sort of Serco contract. And one of the great things about that was we didn't have to furnish it. They wanted it empty. They would put their own furniture in there. So this was perfect. You know, it was, you know, we sort of specified the sort of, you know, we could specify within the type of tenant we wanted in there, which would be sort of blue collar workers. Okay, some of them might have a few issues like sort of drinking problems or something, but you know, we were okay with that. And then basically the day before we were due to sign and then start to move the tenants in, we got a phone call from the guy we'd been dealing with and basically said that the COE had run off with some takings and stuff, and therefore they wasn't actually sure what was going to be going on with the charity. So they didn't want to sign up to a contract with us because they weren't sure they'd be able to honour it. So they pulled out at that time. So it was like, right, we've got a property. And the other thing is, we'd waited for a month as well for them to move in, because they were like, well, we want to take it at the beginning of February. And we're like, okay, well, that's fine. We'll take a hit on the first month, because we kind of thought we're going to get them in for sort of 5 years. So that then meant that we were scrambling around to sort of sort out furniture packages and getting it sort of furnished and getting it back, you know, on the open market for professionals to move in. So, we, you know, we did that, you know, we did what we had to do. The guys we went with in the end, you know, the main thing was really around the speed that they could get the furniture in there for us. So we got that turned around pretty quickly. But then the other challenge we had, which I guess is the last one there, which kind of leads us on to that one, is we'd found a man that could in the area. You know, he was a lettings agent that was... you know, he knew the area well, and you know, we got on well with him. We'd been working with him for sort of several months. You know, he was really good. You could go to him with a property, he'd tell you all about it, who the tenant profile was going to be, what kind of rents we could get, was it a good area to go and buy in or not. You know, we got a good feel about him, and we had someone in our network, Marcus and Elsie, that have been on here before, they was using him. And this is the power of a network, which is why we find it so invaluable, is that, you know, because we'd met with Marcus and Elsie, because we would, you know, we'd talked to them and they invested in our area as well, they told us about the fact that they were having problems with him, and that he wasn't the man that could. He was the man that was corrupt, basically. So that meant that we just dropped him, basically. Like, you know, we didn't go any further with him, and you know, but it was so invaluable that we had that network around us. So, you know, it was a challenge because we were at the finishing line about getting tenants in and stuff, and now we've got to go and try and find a new lettings agent, things like that. But I so much would have preferred to have been in that position that we was in, rather than jumping to bed with him and then all of a sudden we're in a similar situation to Marcus and Elsie. So we dodged a bullet there, really. You know, we were fortunate, but you know, I can't reiterate enough, it's that, you know, it's having people around you in your network that you can lean on, and yeah, so that was good. So yeah, moving on to sort of top tips. Is that me again? Is it?
No.
Okay.
This is me now.
All right. Okay. Go on.
Okay. So one of the things that we thought is, and everyone says this, but do engage with a HMO officer as soon as possible. So as soon as we bought the property, we had the HMO officer around. We told them what we were planning to do with the property. When we had mocked up the en-suites, they came round, they did the measurements, they checked in, they were happy with the room sizes. We did notice that the back bedroom, which was originally going to not have an en-suite, that was something stupid, like half a meter too short.
No, it wasn't even that. It was like point something, like yeah. 0.2. I think you got to be 10.2 for a room, and it was like it was something crazy, like 10.1. And they were like, no, you're going to have to change it. So in the end, what we ended up doing was then turning what was going to be the communal bathroom into an ensuite for that room, which allowed us then to move the door forward, which gave us then that extra space in the bedroom. And we turned then what was going to be the ensuite for the front bedroom into a communal bathroom instead. So yeah, having the HMO officer there and on your side is that's a huge tip. I would recommend people to do.
I think as well, because we'd had them round when we did actually then apply for the license, they signed off the license, no questions. They didn't even come round to review the house when it was done. They just straight away gave us a license, which was great. One thing they did say to us as well is that you don't necessarily need to apply for the license until the fifth person is on the brink of moving in. But we wanted to just get it done and make sure it was out of the way. So we did that as soon as the building was ready. Consider your market and what your competition is. So we've said about, the level of design we did on this property. We've done it because we wanted to attract the blue collar workers. And that's why we did things where we could, where we saved money and reusing the kitchen, anything that we could reuse and refresh. We were doing that because, this specification on this property was built to attract blue collars. And the area in which it's in, you're not going to get white collar workers there. So we constantly kept that in mind. And then consistency and sort of social proof will bring you investors. So we, as Mark was saying at the very start, we post on social media pretty much every day. We do LinkedIn, Facebook, we do Instagram. And we were quite uncomfortable with this at first, and it wasn't something that, felt natural to us. But now we do, and we've got people following our journey. And I think what we've had since we've been doing this is because they can see that we're doing what we say we're doing, because we're putting that proof out there. We've had people contact us now and say, how does investing work with you? What does it entail and what have you? So I think if anyone is struggling, just keep the consistency and keep doing that, because it will pay dividends in the end. It might take a while, but it will. Do an evaluation pack. I don't know if this helped us get the 150 that we were after, but we put everything in there. We put comparables to house prices. We put comparables to the room rentals we were doing. We did before and after. We put our invoices in there, the schedule of works, the lot went into that. Don't know if you looked at it, but we're going to do it, and we continue to do it just to make sure that we do. And then, as Carl was saying, use the knowledge of the people in your network. There's always someone who's done what you're doing or been through what you're going through, or who can provide you with a bit of advice. I think most people, if we reach out to people for help, they help. If people reach out to us, we're willing to help. It's, I think, just having that, the people around you, and taking advantage of the fact that you're in a network is key.
Okay, so what is next? So we've got a few things going through at the moment. We have got a commercial to residential, which you see there. We called it Joan Turner for obvious reasons. It used to be Joan Turner's Hairdressers. So this one at the moment is in the planning stage. So we have the whole building. We've bought the whole building, and the whole building is commercial. And what we want to do is we want to change it from that. So we'll keep the ground floor as commercial and we'll turn upstairs to residential. What that means is we need to change the fascia of the front of the shop. So we're going to put an entrance in at the front for so they can access the upstairs. And then we will turn the shop into just a basically a blank shell for someone to go in there and do what they want. And then upstairs will be a three-bed flat. That's in central Birkenhead. So, yeah, as we were sort of saying with this one, it's still in the planning phase. I guess one tip I would have from this as well is we haven't got this going through Bridge, and we've done this through our SAS pension. And I'm really pleased that we did, because if it had been on Bridging now, when we was due to get the approval on the planning, we then got an email from the planning office and said, oh, basically, I'm not going to be able to look at this for at least another 50 days. And you kind of think, bloody hell, right, okay. So if I'd have been on Bridging now, we'd be starting to get quite nervous about this now, because it's obviously money that you're sort of paying out. So, you know, anyone that's thinking of that, just have that, you know, if you're having to do something where you've got to put planning on there, just, and you're using Bridging, just be mindful of that. You know, don't sort of think, you know, with these kind of things, they always seem to take longer than you anticipated. So that's one we've got going through. So we're ready to start the refurb on that as soon as we get the sort of the planning application. And, you know, we're not expecting any sort of anything to come back negative about that. So there's that one. The next one we've got is, this is the slow burner, this one. This is the HMO that's still in conveyancing and has been for 2 years. This was actually when we got the sale agreed on this when we was still with Mark at the time. What this one was is we'd had a sale agreed on another property, but the survey came back and it basically said that there were structural issues with it. So while we was trying to negotiate this with the vendor, Mark was like, look, go and find another property, have a backup, basically. So that's exactly what we did. And we managed to get the HMO. The HMO, I say HMO, it's a house at the moment that we will turn into a HMO. But it was in a nicer area. It was a good price. It was a better deal, basically. So in the end, we decided to drop the original one because the vendor just wasn't budging on the price, even though there were structural issues. And we went with this one instead. But when we did a survey on this one also had structural issues. What was good about this one, though, is the vendor was willing to go to his. So we sort of spoke to him and said, well, look, why don't you go back to your building insurance and get them to, you know, do the work required, you know, that's needed, which they have done. And the insurers have agreed to that. So all the work, all the issues that came up in the survey, he's managed to get the insurance people to actually pay for it and get it done. So it's obviously taking time at the moment just because, you know, doing structural stuff, they've obviously had to do the repairs, and then there's a period of time where we have to sort of make sure that everything is settled and stable. But yeah, hopefully, you know, we're staying in contact with them and the estate agents. Hopefully soon we'll sort of be able to complete on this one and get going with that. The next one we've got going through is we've got a shop that we've just bought, and it's kind of tied in with the one at the bottom, which is the Maisonette. So originally we bought a Maisonette above a shop. We got it as a repossession. Again, it was another one where we initially put an offer in, it got rejected, someone else bought it. We just kept it on our tracker. We noticed it came back on the market. We put an offer in, got accepted, blah, de, blah, de, blah. We've bought that one. That's being refurbished as we speak. We started that last week. But what we did at the time is when we went through to the people that own the shop below and own the freehold, we just sort of said, look, do you fancy selling the shop to us? Which they said no at first, but she then came back probably like a month later and sort of said, yeah, go on and I'll sell you the shop. So we've bought the shop below. So we've now got the whole building and the freehold. And to be fair, there's a tenant already in that, don't need to refurb it. That's just a nice little cash flow for us, which we'll pop in our SAS pension. But the main thing for us on that one is that we've got the, you know, we've got the whole building and the freehold on it. So they're the things that we've got going on at the moment. And, you know, we're obviously always actively looking for other deals. So that, I think, is us. And again, there's our socials. Take yourself off mute, Mark. Mark, you're on.
I was saying, everybody take a photograph of that, just so that everybody gets you. Yeah, as such. Guys, that was absolutely splendid. That was inspiring because, you know, for me, when I first started working with you and I saw all the challenges that you went through, and I can see how you're starting to, I can't use the word glide, but you're gliding compared to where you were when you first started and the challenges that we had. So I would just say to everybody out there, look, give the guys a massive round of applause, a big thank you. If you've got some questions for the guys, right, and Craig, you'll deal with that. But I've got a couple of things that I want to say is the guys mentioned the 2008 crash. Yeah. New builds. That's why none of us do new builds. Yeah. Yeah. The whole model is flawed. But actually, where you've scored and time will be the healer on this one. Yeah. Right, is you managed to pay for it, right, because you had a decent income coming in. Am I correct? Or was it the serviced accommodation side as well? Or was it a mix of both?
Both. So when we had the people in at the buy-to-lets at the start, it was all good. And then as the interest rate rose, we then had to start subsidising it slightly.
Yeah.
We decided we didn't want to subsidise it, which is why we then flicked it onto the serviced accommodation. And we stuck with the serviced accommodation until the interest rates dropped again. So, yeah so it's a bit of a combination of both, really.
So the message that I'm trying to get out to people is, guys, this thing where we say, check your interest rates, stress test everything at the best part of 6%. That's why it's important, because even though interest rates are relatively low right now, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 5-10 years or so. We don't really even know what's going to happen next week, to be honest, right? But if you've stress tested up front, it should absolutely help us. The bit there for me straight away is you spoke with the HMO officer, right? That to me, for the deal that you put together, that was one of the winning strokes. I'm not saying the winning stroke, but one of the winning strokes. Yeah. And it's something that people do not do up front. Yeah. And they think, oh, I don't need to speak to the HMO officer. But Russ, Russ is out there somewhere. Russ is now teaching the HMO stuff for Asset Academy, right? And, you know, I mean, it's the first port of call, right? Because you need those guys on your team straight away. Best decision I ever did. I know it was. Russ, yeah, I mean, you're out there mentoring as well, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, looking at all of this, obviously what we do up in the Midlands as well, what the guys have done there is absolutely spot on, because the building control, the licensing people, they're either your consultant, free consultant, not free, but free, relatively
free
cheap.
Free consultant, that's a really good phrase, yeah?
Or they're beating you up. And the best way to do it is to chat to them early and say, do you want to be my friend? And yeah, they'll say, yeah, we do, because we want you to do it properly. They want you to get stuff done. That's how they get paid, is by people having HMOs done. Especially building control, they don't, you know.
Yeah, they've got enough to deal with. There's enough slumlords out there and they don't want any more, that's for sure. Yeah. Hold on. My other thing there, property is property. I get that. Yeah. Right, and we're all here for the property side of it. But the bit that makes my tail wag, right, is that, you know, that first deal there, 14,000 per annum. Yeah. That's a serious amount of money. Yeah. You know, that's roughly half the national average wage that's out there. You know, and you know, I do say it all the time, you know, the value of actually getting all this stuff right and spending time, effort and energy piecing it all together, that's like putting £1.4 million in a bank account and collecting the interest right now. You know, Carl, Louise, how long would it take you to save £1.4 million?
Never.
Well, exactly, and that's the power of what actually is being done. You know, and you know, when people are saying to me out there, oh, it's not as easy as all that. It's been a hell of a story. It's a lot more easier than working for 40 years, even though there's struggles involved. It's a lot better than working for 40 years and then not achieving it, yeah? Mm. And I'm sure lots of people on the call will say that. But Craig, I'm gonna pass everything over to you, yeah?
Well, I was gonna say, I have, in the absence, although we do have Russ back with us this time, we've missed Russ for the last few weeks because the last few sessions he's been mentoring and all the rest.
Elusive.
Well, busy. And again, we can make excuses or we can make it happen. And that's why Russ is with us, because he's one of the guys that makes it happen. So I've had one or two questions which I've flicked over to you, Russ, that you've probably seen come through. Just before we hand over to you, I was going to say it's one of the ways that I measure everything is the UK national average wage. Obviously, it's a little bit higher in London, but that's now sitting at about £26,000 a year. So every time your portfolio brings in 26 grand, you say, well, that's a national wage that you've just earned. And yes, you've done the hard bloody work getting there, but now it's easy just stroking it and getting it going along. So 26 grand, it's one of your first goals and hurdles, I guess, to have a ghost worker working for you. But Russ, if you want to go through those, that'll be great.
Yeah. Okay. So, a couple of questions come in about the order of who you got in and when. So, building controller, HMO officer, how early, and what kind of conversations were they willing to have?
So, we got the probably I would say the first people we got involved was the HMO officer, and we did that pretty much as soon as we got the sale agreed. I sent over some drawings of what we wanted to do with it. And to be honest with you, though, we even if we're going for a deal, if there's a deal that we're pretty serious about, we will fire over drawings to the HMO officer and just almost sort of say, like, can you give us your opinion on this? You know, are we going to see any challenges or... you know, this is exactly what, you know, this is what, you know, we want to turn it into this type of a HMO. Are there going to be any challenges there? And so we almost know beforehand whether, you know, they're going to go, yeah, it's either that's fine what you're saying, or no, you know what, you can't have that bedroom with that. So we kind of speak to them all the time. Like, one of the things I can never understand is, you know, when we were sort of going out there and sort of meeting people and trying to grow your network, the amount of other investors in the area that they see the HMO guys as the devil, basically. Yeah. And all they want to do is just butt heads with them. And I just think, why? Because, you know, these guys can say yay or nay to whether you have a license or not. So, you know, why fight them? You know, try and work with them. You know, and the proof was in the pudding there. We brought the guys out. So we sent drawings out to them right at the beginning. That's when he came back and he's like, okay, you might want to think about this, this, and this, you know, which we incorporated. Then as soon as we started, went on site and we started the refurb, we brought them out and they had a wander around and it was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. And then we'd agreed with them that when we put the stud work in, for the en suites. And we just, what we said is what we would do is we will get one of the doors completed for the fire doors. They then, we brought them back out then. And then, so they went around then and they did their, because Wirral Council is very strict. You know, you'll get your gauge for what your council is like, but Wirral's very strict. So they came around and they measured up. And that's when we noticed that the back bedroom was not big enough. And the way we worked around that was to take a little bit from what was going to be the communal bathroom, turn it into an ensuite, move the door forward, which made the corridor space what they would deem as livable space, usable space, and not just the corridor, because they won't count a corridor or the space behind the door, because obviously the door has got to open. So they're that specific about it in Wirral. And so we did all of that, but it was great then, because it just meant then that when it come to get the license, they didn't even bother coming out. They just granted us one. And what I want them to feel with us is that when we're doing something, that we are doing it right and that we do it properly, and therefore, you know, they're not. Yeah, we get a good reputation with them. So we work really hard to get on side with the HMO guys. But then I guess going back to your original question, after that, then the next thing is building control. You've got to get building control involved straight away as well, because we were having to sort of change some of the drains and stuff like that. So they were coming in. But again, they were really helpful because they also signed off on our fire risk assessment. So we paid for them to do the risk assessment. You know, you can do it yourself, but, you know, certainly for our first one, as I wanted someone to do it for us. And so I've got a piece of paper there and they're saying that, you know, this is a compliant property. So, you know, and the same thing again, we was working with them all the time. You know, he was really good, the guy, because he sort of said, look, if you've got any questions, we sort of said something, it's our first HMO. So I just fired them over to me. So, you know, we were quite often sort of firing stuff through and say, oh, we're thinking of doing this. Is there going to be an issue there? And we learned an awful lot from the building control guy. And, you know, in all honesty now, it's like we will always use that company now all the time. Again, building relationships, really, and adding them into our network. So, yeah.
Okay. And there's another question here about the drawings that you'd showed. Did you do those? Did you have somebody more qualified to do them?
No, I did them myself, to be fair. I did the... So you need to submit drawings. So we submitted drawings for the HMO guys. They wanted to see something there. Didn't necessarily have to be to scale or anything like that. So all we ended up doing is I just took the, you know, like quite often you'll go into Rightmove and they've got a floor plan there, like looking down on the property. We just took them. I put them into like a drawing editor and just amended like the things in there. So you had to put things in there like... You know, like where the coal points are going to be, where your fire alarm panel's going to be, your emergency lighting. You know, you have to sort of say on there like what fire precautions you was putting into each room and stuff. So I just added all that onto there. You know, and obviously the new layout, which was, you know, what it was going to look like, with like measurements in there of like this room is like 10.2 or this one's like 14.6, whatever the size of the rooms was, which, to be honest with you, they were already on there from when they'd been sort of like listed in through Rightmove. So we just used one of them. And then when you have to submit drawings for the building control officer, again, I just used the same drawing and I just adapted it to what he wanted to see. You know, I then had all of the, you know, the sort of like the fire precautions that we needed on there. So yeah, that's what we did on that. I could have paid for someone to do it, but I didn't want to pay £700. When I passed it through to the HMO guys, they're fine what we sent them. Building control was fine with that. So that's what we'll always do now.
Cool. And somebody's asking, interested about the SAS pension that you mentioned. Was that something that you needed to get advice on, or is that something that you could access
Pain in the bloody ass, to be fair.
We have a trustee, don't we?
You have to have a trustee, basically. So you're going to have somebody that sort of administers it for you. Because otherwise, you know, they're there to keep you on the straight and narrow, because there's a lot of criteria about how you can use SAS pension. So with the Joan Turner one, what we did there is, we have actually done that as a loan back to ourselves, but you can only do 50% of the value of your pension. And we did it that way with that one, because we're going to turn upstairs into a residential and you cannot hold residential property in a SAS pension. So there's a whole sort of world of SAS sort of criteria that you have to follow. So you do need a trustee. So, you know, that would be, if someone's interested in doing that, by all means, give us a call and we can talk you through like what we've done. But, you know, the main thing is, you know, find a good trustee to work with. And, you know, they're there basically to guide you through the minefield, which is SAS.
And it's a serious minefield. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a frustrating one as well, because you feel like you've got something and off you go running, and then you come back and go, oh, no, you can't do that because of the X, Y, or Z. You're like...
They're not very creative sometimes, the trustees.
Our trustee thinks that I think we're a bit like sort of Del Boy and a bit dodgy, because we keep going. And I'm sort of saying to him, look, it's a tough market at the moment. We're having to be creative with how we structure a deal. And I need you to be creative with the SAS. And he just thinks, yeah, I think he thinks we're trying to pull a Swifty on him all the time.
Cool. Well, that's gone down well with the person that was asking that. Questions about the learnings from the builder. I'm presuming you're not using him if he's not returning your calls. What would you do differently?
We got on well with him, to be fair. But yeah, just go on. Sorry, what was the question there?
What would you do differently in hindsight, if anything?
What would he do differently? I guess try and be a little bit more patient. Like, we were kind of like, we want to get going. You know, what we should have probably really done was taking him round the property. And sort of like got him to walk round it and then give us another quote. And you know, if worst case, maybe delayed the start of the refurb a little bit, because maybe we had to get someone else. And then the other thing as well is, I know it's always that thing, is get more than one quote. You know, it's quite difficult. It's really difficult to find a good builder. If you find one, hold on to it and don't tell anyone about them, basically. But yeah, it's like try and get more than one quote, so that, you know, you've at least got a comparison. But you know what? Sometimes you've just got to get on the horse, haven't you? And, you know, and have a go, and, you know, and learn, basically. That's the biggest thing, you know, is, you know, don't sit there, you know, pontificating about it, trying to get the perfect quote and the perfect builder. Just go through it. As long as you've done the due diligence that you think you can do, then, you know, that should mitigate you potentially getting into bed with a real cowboy. But you know, there's always going to be challenges.
I was just going to say one thing, because I know a lot of our listeners are starting off, and it's one of the things we say from time to time, and this is a great example of why. You don't want your first project to be a new roof, new windows, new boiler, pick up the floors. You know, you don't want a 25 grand refurb, because if you find out your builder is a little bit suspect, you know, you'll probably find that out by the time you spend 15 or 20 grand. And then you'll need to get a second builder to come in, and the second one will charge you more because it's got to undo the cowboy job the first one did. So for those of you starting off, you want to be able to add value. You need to pick something that's, you know, 6 or 7 grand mark, where it's a kitchen or a bathroom, not both. You know, it's the windows or the boiler. Again, it's not both. Just so if you do test your builder, you're testing him on something that's manageable as your first project. Sorry, Louise.
No, I was going to say one of the things, because we'd had these two leaks in what were effectively the two new bathrooms, just something you could potentially do is, you know, go in and let the showers run in across the bathrooms, you know, for a certain amount of time, so you can see there if something's not quite right, and, you know, it might expose that leak when you're still in your snagging period with your builder, as opposed to when somebody moves in 2 months later and then starts using the things in earnest. So yeah, that would say.
Yeah, and I'd be honest with you, like with something like that, like it's a very specific one too, like the leaks, but is, you know, it is maybe even get them to run the system before they start boarding it all out. And then you really will see if there's any sort of leaks or anything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a very specific point to the issue we had. But yeah, that's something I maybe sort of like speak to the next plumber about. It's like, right, run the system now before we sort of like get the plasterers in.
Yeah, having managed lots of newly refurbished properties, and we've got a huge the snagging list, but then the ready to rent list, and it is all of those things, you know, and it's just testing it and living it. Yeah. But I will say, even when we do those, when the tenants move in and it gets proper usage,
yeah,
you know, it still happens. So
One of the things, just very quickly, because water is one of your biggest issues in a property, is we ended up filling up the bath before the guys would start to seal it. And quite often these things, you can test them and they look fine. But the moment you add weight, where somebody's walking around in the shower pan or sitting in the bath and the bath is full, it then tends to move and jar things. Yes. So it's not good enough just to test it and say, oh, look, it doesn't seem to be leaking. You've almost got to fill it up or put your swimming costume on and get in there and splash around a bit.
Well, one of the serviced accommodation hotels, really, that somebody that I've been working on, yeah, I mean, we got all their friends around there for a couple of nights before we even opened it, just to test it, so we didn't get any bad reviews. Those things have to be done.
Yeah.
Other questions?
I think that's more or less it. I mean, what are our popular questions, really? What would you say, looking back now on the first few years, what would be your sort of your biggest learning points?
I guess what I sort of spoke about before is have a strong network around you and work at building your network. You know, don't think that it's like you can go through training, you can go to a few networking meetings and then I'll just knock it on the head now. Just, you know, that should be your bread and butter. You know, you go to that and, you know, go to as many as you can. I know through lockdown, we were pretty much on a networking call every night. You know, it's so important to have people around you and people that you can lean on.
I notice it, and Russ, you probably notice it as well when you're mentoring. The people that network achieve at a better level than the people that don't. The people that don't network, right, they're consistently asking questions, and there's always that why, and it stops them in their tracks from doing stuff, yeah? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you see it, Russ, yeah?
Yeah, it's... you know, I know it's something you do as well, Mark. When people are struggling, you know, there's a few things, and where are you networking, who are you listening to, is one of those questions that we ask to see, you know, why have you gone off the boil, or, you know, why are you struggling, what is it you're putting into your head, you know, and if it's not networking, then that's a big box not ticked.
Yeah. The other things I would say is really important is just being consistent all the time. You know, like social media for us was massive. You know, we started off doing a few posts here and there, and then, you know, we really ramped it up, and, like, you know, Lou does all of our social media. And the other thing as well is, like, we have like a marketing strategy, and you know, we do a lot of direct to vendor. And again, it's, you know, with the social media and the sort of the marketing, it's consistency. It's doing it all the time. You know, even even if you're not seeing immediate results, that they are happening in the background. You know, the amount of times we've had someone that's picked the phone up and go, oh, this is the fifth letter you've sent me. You want to buy one of my houses, do you? And I'm like, yeah, I do. The thing is consistency. And then probably the last big thing for me is get a mentor, is get someone there that has been there and done it and can steer you. And, you know, that's been so valuable to us. And we will always have a mentor now, no matter how far down we get and how big we get, we'll always have a mentor. Because it's just someone there. So especially, it's so important in the beginning, because it's a comfort blanket. It's you're looking at a deal, and you know, when you're talking about them, it all sounds that easy. But when you've got to start signing up to something and putting money down on the table, it can be quite scary. And having someone there that looks at your deal and goes, "Yeah, I'd do that," you think, "Right, I'm going now. I'm off." So yeah, I would say get a mentor. That they've been like the big things for us.
Okay, I think that's all of us there, Mark.
Okay, yeah, cool. Big round of applause for the guys. Yeah, massive round of applause. I mean, there's lots of lessons in there for everybody, right? Whether we're starting out or whether we're already up and running. There's still always something to learn. Always be learning. Yeah, always be learning. And, you know, one of the big things that I took away from tonight's call for the guys, right, which is just disseminated throughout the network, is, you know, the power of the HMO officer on the when we get into that field. Right. And how they can really make it work for you or not make it work for you, because that was exactly the same experience that I had. I found one guy wasn't helpful, went to another town that was helpful. Yeah. And they just glided me through it. Yeah. Glided me through it. So, Carl Louise, thank you very much indeed for doing that. But let me ask you, what did you take away from tonight's call, Carl and Louise?
I'll let you answer that.
I was going to say, he's been answering all the questions. Do you know what? It's actually, I would say that we probably are still, you know, relatively new and at the start, but it's good to know that we can actually still share things that would be valuable for other people, even though we're, you know, relatively new. So, yeah,
we're nothing special at all. And if we can do it, anyone that's sat on here that's just starting out, you can do it as well. But do it. Take action.
Do it. Yeah.
You know, don't pontificate. Just, you know, you're going to make mistakes. We'll make them. But, you know, I guess the sort of Craig's point is just be mindful of what you're doing when, you know, don't go and do a little, you know, buy to let end it. Literally, you know, all you've got is a shell there. You know, start off sensibly. But start off sensibly. Have a mentor behind you and stuff like that. And, you know, have a good network about you and you'll be fine. But yeah, all I'm saying is, like, if, you know, we can do it. You know, it wasn't that long that we were sort of like on here listening to other people thinking like, oh, I wonder if we'll ever tell our story. And, you know, we're on here now. So, but take massive action, take huge action.
Do it. Yeah. Well done.
Thanks, guys. There's going to be a question for everybody else. If you wouldn't mind putting in the chat box, we always love to kind of say, what did you take away? And it's a bit of feedback for Carl and Lou. But yeah. If you wouldn't mind just typing that in the bottom, I assume it's probably all going to end up in Russ's lap. But it's interesting, you know, we listen to these things and every day is a learning day. But the one thing I took away from that is it's a bit of a team sport. You know, we talked about bringing the SaaS people in and how complex that is. That's not a DIY area.
Yeah.
You know, you had the builder and you had the handyman and you tapped into, and I've forgotten their names now, but, you know, the other investors in the area that you tapped into to find out your handyman's got a few dodgy issues and the social media and what's happening then. And to me, the big message I just heard, team sport, it's group effort.
Yeah, I've also written here, these guys made their own luck just by doing it. They didn't procrastinate at all, yeah. Yeah, there might have been lots of questions going on at the time, but they didn't procrastinate when it came to pulling the trigger. You know, but procrastination really does kill most people. Yeah, they made their own luck. They're not lucky. Louise and Carl made their own luck. So, questions, guys. Oh, sorry, comments. What are you taking away from tonight?
So there's quite a lot in here. Then the some of the things that you can do where there's value, things like the floor plans, but not doing the wallpaper, getting the right people around you, social networking, networking events, talking to people, a number of thank yous, and a lot of inspiration being taken. Felicity said she's taken out. Stay strong when you feel someone in your power team is working against you rather than with you. That's a good good thing. Don't pontificate. Social networking again. Never give up. Take action. Get the HMO officer involved. Liking the direct vendor stuff. So lots of different people taking different things out of that.
Cool. Good.
Yeah, I've got a couple that have come through to me as well, Russ. Elizabeth Taylor saying, very inspiring story. Please thank Lou and Carl for sharing. Roman and Jenny, enjoy the journey. Make use of your team. There was another one there as well. Richard Homer, Richard saying, thanks for a great insight. See you all soon. Yeah. Okay, Craig.
Cool, is that it? Cool. So, Mark, I don't know whether
big thank you. Yeah.
Got a slide you want to bring up just while I'm talking? We perhaps need to make you.
Yeah. So, Carl.
Host again.
So Carl Louise, stop sharing your screen, please. Thank you. Brilliant. And I'll share my screen. All right. Over to you, Craig. Go on.
Cool. So, guys, thank you for that feedback. As with everything, we're really keen that this isn't just entertaining. That you have got something that you can take and apply to going forward. That's always our key. I appreciate it's a bank holiday Monday. So I've largely had a day off, so a bit tough getting back into it. And hopefully you've used the time productively. You know, every day we get off gives you choices. You can either watch Netflix all day or kind of do a little bit of research, direct to vendor, follow up on some offers, send a few emails for when people are back in the office tomorrow on offers that you put in, and basically just using the time as best you can to get as much out of it. So hopefully you've had a fantastic bank holiday Monday. Hopefully this has rounded it off and given you something to think about. And as always, we thank you for your time. And I think Mark's just got one or two slides here just to share with you.
I just want to say here, guys, obviously, we're trying to keep the network going, keep it all. We would love at some point to be actually out there live again, wouldn't we, Craig? Yeah.
But you
can see that our business model is based on generating great referrals from clients. So, guys, look, if you know a couple of people that should be coming on these, would get value from watching the reruns or being here on the night, then just please refer them. But if you do refer them, make sure that you use your new unique referral link. Yeah. And if you haven't got unique referral link, right, then we can't put a drink in your bank account for you. So just text me on that number, take a photo. If you haven't got time to write it down, just take a photo on it. From my perspective about tonight, I would just like to thank you for coming on. You know, I mean, I'm shocked too. A bank holiday, all right, the weather's not fantastic, certainly not down here in Luton. It's been absolutely crap, right? But people are out there still learning, want to know more, and if you've taken one little golden nugget away, we've done our job tonight. Wouldn't you agree, Craig?
I think so. I've enjoyed that. That's been good. And really, without wanting to be horrible, Colin and Lucia themselves, you know, they weren't gifted superheroes. That they've just taken the mentor and the coaching, They've taken action. They've dealt with the issues that came their way. And really, I don't think we can say it any better than that.
Yeah.
So thank you both once again.
Agreed.
Also, thanks to Young Dan for the bridging stuff. And Russ, as always, lovely to have you back, sir. We've missed you the last few weeks, but for keeping us on track in the techno and crowd management and all the rest. As always, Mark, thank you for finding Lou and Carl and for all your insight and input. Always great. Rory, we've missed, but for those of you that are regulars, 2 weeks' time, which is the... So, important note. 2 weeks' time is the 14th of September. We normally do this on a Monday, except Mark and I and Russ and Dan have got a bit of a masterminding thing happening on Monday, which tends to overrun and be a bit late. So actually, in 2 weeks' time, it's not a Monday, it's a Tuesday. It's one of our little disruptions. It is mentioned on the Facebook thing. It's also mentioned on the Meetup website. But while you've all got your diaries to hand, I think it's the 14th is a Tuesday is when we will hopefully next get together. And there we will be, as you know, alternating. So this time we were looking at a bit of a deal analysis. Next time is somebody's kind of story in their journey. And really, I suppose, like most of them, it's never easy, never as you plan. So it's the challenges they've faced and how they've got over it and the strategies they've put in place to get over the challenges. Really with a view to you know, we're often in the same boat. You may have the similar things and what can you pick up and learn from that? As always, these are all recorded. So if you didn't take any notes or you're lying there tonight and you want to think about something, we will in the next few days get this out there so you can go back and listen to anything you did miss again, which is a fantastic feature. And I think really with that being said, my usual little closing, and we've heard it tonight, action beats inaction. Stick with the basics and focus on building your asset column and your income producing assets. So thank you all. Have a fantastic 2 weeks. We look forward to seeing you soon. And much appreciated.
Rocky, rolly, movie, groovy, everybody. See you all later.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
You know where I am. Hey, cheerio.